Minnesota.
Brett Johnson and Hunter Haas filling in on your Tuesday afternoon. Doug Padgett is out on the road. He's, of course, doing his Vote Common Good campaign. Hopefully you've been hearing him talk about that on the air occasionally. Hunter, how you doing today?
I'm good.
Have you followed Doug's Vote Common Good campaign very much?
Yeah, I have. I've looked at some of the dates and the guests, and he's got a real good one here, October 10th, I believe, with Dean Phillips, Angie Craig, Richard Painter, and a few others.
Yeah, I love the concept of that campaign. At first, I was just kind of following it from, you know, kind of a bird's eye view, but I love the concept of this campaign of really challenging evangelical voters to say, can you really support Republicans anymore in light of what Donald Trump has done in the past in terms of ethics, morals, and everything else wrong with Donald Trump? It's a challenge I think evangelicals need to face, because so often you hear, you've probably run into this too, well, I don't really like what Donald Trump is doing, but you know, Hunter, have you seen the stock market, though? Look at how good we're doing with the stock market. Isn't it great? Look at the economy. Our job numbers are great. And Doug brought up this really good point. Well, wait, does that mean your morals are for sale? It's an interesting way to phrase that question. And that's what he's trying to accomplish with that Vote Common Good campaign. Really cool thing when it comes to Minnesota. What do you say? It was October 10th when it's coming around here? Yeah, I don't know the exact date, but yeah, October 10th, you can Google Vote Common Good, get more information about that. That is where Doug is off to today. I believe he's in New York doing some campaigning out there, trying to get people to, well, vote for the common good, because, oh gosh, do we need this in 2018, especially in light of what's happening with Brett Kavanaugh. I don't know, Hunter, if you just saw what the latest revelation with Brett Kavanaugh, this story has some legs on it with him possibly being an assaulter and having a pretty shady history back in high school. Apparently, someone has released that yearbook from the high school Brett Kavanaugh went to, and already in the yearbook they were saying he was, a pretty heavy drinker, to say the least. There are references on his page about Keg City Club and the 100 kegs or bust. So, I don't know, this is something that might have some legs on it coming up. Once these hearings take place, which I believe are scheduled for next week, where it's going to be both him and the accuser that are both going to be testifying under oath in front of the Senate. So we'll chat about this probably the second half of the show when we have a special guest in studio with us. That's actually Bill Halter, who is the communications director for the Richard Painter campaign. He'll be joining us and we'll chat about that a little bit more. But Hunter and I already, we were chatting before the show. We kind of disagree on this, on whether this story about Brett Kavanaugh and the accuser have any legs on it. I tend to think it does, and he might have a chance of not being confirmed. Hunter, a little bit more on the cynical route, saying that he thinks they're going to jam through Kavanaugh any way possible.
Yeah, I just think they've been wanting this for so long, and there's so much pressure from the national GOP to get through conservative Supreme Court justices, because this is probably the last chance they'll have like this to easily get through. And with all the tampering and shenanigans they've done to Democratic Supreme Court nominees, they want to get this done.
I don't necessarily disagree with that aspect, because it is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to overturn Roe versus Wade. And of course, boy, would they face a tremendous backlash if they fail to put a conservative Supreme Court justice in Washington coming up during this next term. But we'll chat about that a little bit later on in the program. But for now, I want to start off with some local news. By the way, you can call us at 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Chat about any subject. Love to hear from you throughout the show. I don't think I've hosted a show here with Hunter in about a month or so, so good to be back on the airwaves here on AM 950. So I got to talk about something that's been a pet peeve of mine for about a decade, because this bugs me every time we have an election season in Minnesota. And I hate doing this, because this organization generally does a pretty good job with news, but it's the Star Tribune. You've probably seen this. The Star Tribune's been releasing all sorts of polling data over the past few days, and it's been relatively some good news for Democrats. We got Tina Smith with a 7-point lead over Karen Housley. Jim Neuberger. Oh, man, is Jim Neuberger... He's coming for the record of Kurt Bills, where Bills lost to Klobuchar by, I think, more than a 2-1 margin. He's well on his way to losing to Klobuchar by a similar margin. Klobuchar leads him 65-30. And then Tim Walz has a pretty solid lead over Jeff Johnson. It's right around, I think, 8 or 9 points in the latest polling there. But here's the point of why I want to talk about Star Tribune polling is that for the past 10 years, it has been notoriously and wildly inaccurate. It's something I started picking up during the 2008 election cycle, which was when I really started getting into politics and following these Minnesota races. And I remember them back in 2008, and one of the polls they released that absolutely bugged me showed that, I think they released this back in October of 2008, in Minnesota, they released that Barack Obama and John McCain were tied and Minnesota was a battleground state. Of course, we saw what happened later in that election cycle where Barack Obama absolutely trounced McCain in Minnesota, but that wasn't the only race they got wrong. They also said Al Franken was going to beat Norm Coleman by 9 percentage points. And of course, we know what happened back in 2008 with the big recount between Franken and Coleman, but the Star Tribune said Franken was going to win by 9 points. 2010, similar thing happened. They said Mark Dayton had it in the bag against Tom Emmer. They showed him with a 9-point lead. That, of course, went down to another recount. Looking at 2012, they showed Mitt Romney and Barack Obama were neck and neck. That, of course, ended up being Obama winning Minnesota by 8 percentage points. 2014, they showed Mark Dayton beating Jeff Johnson by 12 percentage points. That one also closer than that polling appeared. It was only a 5-point win by Dayton over Johnson, but by far, the main event and the most egregious error they had with the Star Tribune, 2016, this was during actually the Democratic primary. So to the Strib's credit, they actually did get polling right in terms of the Marco Rubio, Donald Trump, and was it Ted Cruz, the third guy who was running?
Yeah.
God, it seems so long ago. Yeah, it was those three guys running. They did, to their credit, actually call that Marco Rubio was going to win Minnesota, but following with their usual history, they were completely inaccurate in terms of their polling on the Democratic race between Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton. And this poll was only released about a month before we had caucuses in Minnesota. Strib showed that Hillary Clinton was going to beat Bernie Sanders in Minnesota by 23 percentage points. 23. Actually, get that wrong. It was 34 points that they had Hillary beating Bernie by. It was actually Bernie who beat Hillary by 23 points. So if you do that math on that, that means they were wrong by, get this, 57 percentage points. 5-7, 57 percentage points. How do you miss a poll by 57 percentage points?
That's really bad.
57. That's mind-boggling. So the point of this is that when you see the Star Tribune polling out there, kind of take it with a grain of salt. It's been a pet peeve of mine for a while. I generally like the news they put out there, with the exception of the fact that they've had their budgets cut over the years, so they don't quite get to do some of the hard-hitting reporting they used to. But, God, their polling has just been awful for years and years and years. So even though we see some good news for Amy Klobuchar, Tina Smith, and Tim Walz, don't necessarily take that to the bank. These races could still end up closer than they appear because if you look at the Star Tribune's history, it is not good in terms of polling.
So what's your feeling? Like, where do you think these polls are wrong? Do you think it's swung the other way or that the races are closer?
It's funny you mentioned that. I was going to get to that in just a second. I actually think I'm not surprised by those numbers. I think they could end up being pretty accurate. The only one that I think they may have missed a little bit, I just have a feeling Tina Smith is probably going to beat Karen Housley by double digits. Just because, I mean, we saw that Phil Housley ad she aired where Phil Housley, as Matt has railed on a number of times, misses a wide open net by about, I think it's the goalpost when he's shooting from 5 feet away when he's a former NHL player. I don't know. I just get a vibe that Karen Housley reminds me a lot of Sarah Palin and especially, I hate bringing up this name, Michelle Bachmann. It's trying to bring up that old hockey mom, mama grizzly type thing that I just don't know that that really appeals to voters nowadays. And you also have Tina Smith, who, even though I disagree with her on a few issues, especially mining, I think she's done a pretty good job in the Senate. So that one I could see maybe being a little bit wider, but I don't know. What are your thoughts on that Smith-Housley race?
That one I do think actually is kind of accurate. I think that may be closer than some of the other races, just because not as many Democrats are as enthusiastic about Tina Smith.
Mm-hmm.
And Karen Housley is very visible. She's on TV all the time. I mean, even though it's a bad ad, it's getting her name out there.
And people do disagree whether this is a bad ad. Some people think that folksy thing kind of appeals to them and could appeal to voters. I tend to disagree just because we're kind of in that post-Michelle Bachmann, Sarah Palin age where I don't know if being the folksy, wearing a flannel sheet and putting your foot up on a foot post and saying, gosh, I'm for the working class guy. I'm not sure that really appeals to people anymore, but maybe you disagree. Give us a call, 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Walz Johnson, I could see that being about a 9 or 10 point margin. And Klobuchar, Neuberger, the only question is whether Amy Klobuchar breaks 70% in that race. I think we can go ahead, as we've said on previous shows, and call that race for Amy Klobuchar. I'd be stunned if she didn't pick up at least 65% this year.
What was the Star Tribune's poll for that one again?
65 to 30.
Okay.
Yeah, that seems about right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I think that margin is approaching the 2012 race between her and Kurt Bills. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. And we're going to pivot back to the Brett Kavanaugh hearings as Julie in Minneapolis wants to talk about that and some of the testimony taking place next week. Julie, what's on your mind?
Yeah, well, first of all, I agree with you. Democrats cannot relax in Minnesota. I'm confused about something. I guess it's possible. So what I heard is witnesses are not going to be allowed to speak at this hearing. It's just going to be the two of them. And that's what happened with Anita Hill. I mean, I just find that appalling. But I don't know if you know anything about that, but I thought I'd throw that out there. And the other thing is, I guess Grassley said not too long ago that she might not appear. I'm wondering if she's getting threatened on social media. Maybe you can look into the Grassley comments.
Yes.
Mainly I was wondering about, it looks like they're not going to let any witnesses appear, and there was a witness to this assault. So you could just give me your opinion on that. Thank you.
Yeah, so I have a couple thoughts on that. I believe Grassley made those comments before it was confirmed that she was going to testify, because I think the original thinking for Republicans was, well, let's invite her to testify with the thinking that she probably won't show up. Well, of course, she did a 180 and completely surprised them when she said, all right, I'll come to Washington and testify. So I think when Grassley made those comments, that was before she'd agreed to go to D.C., although correct me if I'm wrong if anyone does any research on that, but I believe that was the timeline on that. In terms of the testimony, I find that kind of interesting because I've heard the rumors that what Republicans want to do is have, if you remember, I think it was from earlier this week, or maybe late last week, there were these 65 classmates of Brett Kavanaugh who signed this letter saying, he's the greatest guy in the world and he would never do any kind of assault like this. I heard there were rumors they actually wanted to put these people, I don't know if necessarily on the testimony stand or the stand, but to at least have them out there and on the public record that they thought Brett Kavanaugh was a great guy. So I'm not sure if they're going to bar testimony from witnesses, especially if they're pro Brett Kavanaugh, but we'll have to wait and see. That's at least what I've been seeing. I don't know, Hunter, if you've been following that closely at all in terms of if they're going to allow witnesses or that timing on the Chuck Grassley comment. But I at least think with Grassley, he made those comments before she had agreed to testify.
Yeah, I'm not certain. I haven't heard when she asked me. I thought I'd throw it to you because I didn't know.
Throwing you on the spot right there, but I'm pretty sure that was the timing because I don't think she agreed to testify until like late yesterday afternoon, maybe even into the evening hours. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. We'll take a break, take your calls, and also get into some other local political stories here in Minnesota. You're listening to Brett Johnson and Hunter Haas filling in on your Tuesday afternoon.
Wide selection of outdoor hearth products at Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces. Whether you prefer wood or gas, Woodland Stoves has the fire to fit your home. Pizza aficionados know nothing matches masonry oven baking for capturing flavor and nutrition. Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces can easily install one in your home or business. Enthusiasts use these ovens year-round for bread making, wood roasting, even grilling.
The mission and passion of Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces is to make the fire work for you. The way humans relate to fire is primordial. We have used fire to warm our bodies, cook our meals, and kindle our spirits. Our team has the know-how to do this in a clean-burning and environmentally smart way. Visit our store and experience the diversity. We have over 35 working units on display at the corner of Riverside and East Franklin. See us online at woodlandstoves.com. Find the fire that fits and works for you.
Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces, out of the ordinary products and services since 1977.
Hi, this is Paul Metza, inviting you to listen to the Wall of Power Radio Hour every weekend on AM 950. We are now in our third year of broadcasting on the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. MinPost has called us one of the 22 most independently entertaining and cool radio shows in the Twin Cities. We feature cool people from all walks of life and from all 50 states every Saturday at 6 p.m., replayed Sunday at 4 p.m. on AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota.
Burger Mo's gorgeous patio is open for the season. Enjoy nightly happy hours, more than 60 beers on tap, and the weather while you watch your favorite game on the outdoor screen. And don't miss live music Thursdays, Fridays, and Saturdays. Offering 20 fresh, never frozen burger varieties, Burger Mo's also offers delicious appetizers, soups, salads, as well as unburgers, dogs, paninis, shakes, and desserts. Burger Mo's is located at 242 West 7th Street in St. Paul with plenty of free parking and online at burgermo's.com.
Seward Co-op, serving the community for nearly 45 years, invites you to shop their two convenient locations, both offering the strong commitment to local producers and healthy foods you've come to expect. Seward focuses on locally grown and raised products, fair trade, and environmental sustainability. Shop their selection of meats, artisan cheeses, and house-made baked goods. Find Seward at 2823 East Franklin Avenue or the Friendship Store on 38th Street and 3rd Avenue in Minneapolis. More at seward.coop.
Be sure to pick up your copy of this month's Natural Awakenings magazine, a free local guide to a healthier and more balanced life. Each monthly issue includes timely, local, national, and global stories. Learn about alternative and complementary medicine, nutrition, fitness for body and mind, personal growth, sustainability, and much more. Natural Awakenings can be found at area health food stores, food co-ops, and retail locations. More information is available at naturaltwincities.com. That's naturaltwincities.com.
AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. You got Brett Johnson and Hunter Haas filling in. Joined in the next segment by Bill Halter. He was the former communications director of the Richard Painter campaign. We're going to take kind of a closer look at what it takes to run an insurgent campaign when you're a huge underdog, because I think that's something that's going to be important to Democrats in future years, especially if the next two election cycles go their way, where we maybe take the House, take the Senate, and take the presidency. How important will it be to hold our Democratic politicians accountable? So it's a conversation we're going to have coming up in the next segment with Bill Halter, who, again, former communications director for the Richard Painter campaign. Oh, man, Hunter, I was talking with you about this during the break. Am I going to get corrected by Randy in Coon Rapids? Oh, man. Randy, what's on your mind? Are you going to set me straight here?
Well, I don't know. I'm not going to say I'm going to correct you because, I mean, I don't know for a fact, but I've been listening to a whole bunch of different stations today. And from what I've heard, it sounded like she wanted to come testify. And now that they're going, okay, well, it's all set up Monday, are you going to be there? And it sounded like, from what I had heard, that she was backing off and didn't know if she was going to come and testify. And they were offering her different options, whether she wanted to testify in open or behind closed doors. And at this point, from what I had heard today, that they have not got a confirmation she was going to show up. And I think they were looking at trying to give her a deadline so they could kind of plan. Mm-hmm. And as far as the other guy that was supposedly in this room with them.
Yeah, you're talking, I think Judge is his last name.
Yeah, I think it might have been through an attorney, or he said himself he does not wish to speak publicly about this. He does not ever remember being in a room in that situation or anything about it. That was his statement.
Okay.
And that was the end of the discussion for him.
Yeah, we were trying to do some research during the breaks, Hunter, Bill, and myself. And yeah, we're finding mixed reports on that. I'm at least going by with what I saw yesterday, where it sounded like she was going to come in and confirmed late yesterday, but now we're kind of getting some mixed reports. So I think, Hunter, you're ready to chime in. You found some information on that.
Okay, yeah, so it is mixed reports. So right now, the New York Post, Kavanaugh's accuser hasn't confirmed she'll testify against him. And NPR, Kavanaugh, an accuser to testify before senators next week. Huffington Post, Mark Judge, key witness to alleged Brett Kavanaugh assault, refuses to testify. So the witness, he's not. That's correct. Mm-hmm. That's everyone is saying that. And
yeah, then, I heard Judge wasn't going to testify. That sounded like it was pretty firm.
Yeah. Kavanaugh's accuser has not responded to multiple Senate requests to appear before committee.
So, Randy, as your boy Donald says, we're going to be left in suspense, right?
Well, it looks like we're going to, but, I mean, doesn't it seem a little bit strange how Dianne Feinstein has had this for so long, and supposedly this gal gave her this letter but said, oh, I don't want to speak publicly about it. Well, didn't you kind of open that door when you supposedly sent this letter to Dianne Feinstein? You basically said, I'm speaking about this publicly. I mean, did she think that Dianne was supposed to get this letter and go, okay, here's this letter. Wow, look at all these accusations. Okay, I'm not going to say nothing about that. I mean, it seems really fishy. And then I heard today, I don't know, this is what I heard on some different stations, that this gal is a huge resist activist and very, you know, like a very liberal type person, and she's involved as far as
resist
movement.
So I got to stop you right there, only because initially when they made reports on this professor, they actually mixed her up with a different California professor who had the same name. Yeah, so just be careful with that, since there were some news outlets that were putting out that information, mm-hmm. so you might just want to double check on that, since even I saw that as well and thought that, well, maybe that is a little bit fishy. But yeah, make sure you check out on that. Randy, thanks for the call. Just want to wrap up here since we got some other stuff to get to, but yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens coming up next week with that testimony. And in terms of saying that, well, is it fishy that Feinstein didn't release the information till, well, before the, well, just before, or just after they had done their hearings already? I mean, to me, it seems pretty legitimate, since if you look at her notes that she was making with the psychiatrist she was meeting with, I mean, these date back to 2012, where she was saying that she was assaulted by a high-level person in Washington. So to me, that story seems to have some legs on it. So I want to pivot back to a Minnesota story and a MinnPost article that was released the other day about trackers. Hunter, I think you're familiar with trackers. I know you got a phone call right now, so I'll go to you in just a second. But trackers, MinnPost did an article about them. These are basically these people that follow around politicians and candidates with cameras and try to catch them saying, well, unsavory things. They try to catch on inconsistencies. It's a really interesting job, and I know you can make some money doing that. What's interesting about the MinnPost article was that no current trackers wanted to be interviewed, but they did talk to some former trackers, including Michael Broadcorb. And one of the things I think Michael Broadcorb brought up is that if you're a tracker, you really shouldn't be asking questions of these candidates. He says it can be tense at these events without confronting candidates, and you're really there just to get information on them. So that's at least what he's been saying, since we've been seeing some Republican trackers that are going out there and trying to directly ask a lot of these candidates about, especially on the DFL side, do you support Keith Ellison? Do you support Keith Ellison? So I don't know, Hunter, what do you feel about trackers? Is it an ethical thing to go out and videotape a candidate pretty much 24/7?
I mean, it's so common now. And both parties do it. They coordinate it like a state party system, hire people to do this. And yeah, I've seen my friend's campaign, and they carry around papers that have pictures of all the known trackers. And is it ethical? But it happens. It's the reality.
Yeah, and it's pretty much how, if you remember Mitt Romney's comment about the 47%. That are going to vote Democrat no matter what, that was actually caught by a tracker. When Barack Obama made his comment about people who cling to guns and religion, that was also caught by a tracker. And I think the most famous example that kind of brought trackers to the forefront was, if you remember back in 2006, there was a Virginia governor candidate on the Republican side. George Allen was a name, and he referred to an Indian American tracker as a macaca, which is a very racial term. That got him in some trouble, and that's kind of what brought trackers into the forefront. So, yeah, I have mixed feelings about that, too, because you do want to catch politicians sometimes unguarded to actually get what they think, because so often when they speak at public events, you're just getting that very political face.
And then what they also do is they have basically trackers for the trackers to also record these things. They do because they don't want things to be edited out of context. So the tracker has put out something, and then they've had to re-release the trackers video that put it into context.
What if we get the trackers of the trackers of the trackers? That seems like an endless train that could be going on. But hey, you know, if you work for campaigns, that's a good way to make some money. And one final point about campaign money. You emailed this to us a while ago on Matt's show, how in terms of voter enthusiasm, definitely seems to be on the Democratic side in Minnesota. And in fact, you actually ran into some Republican door knockers who you thought, or I think you actually confirmed, are being paid. They're not doing it as volunteers.
Yeah, so I have seen this whole cycle. I have been targeted with ads to door knock for conservative Republican campaigns.
And you instantly said yes, because I'll do anything for a buck.
But I was like, wow, if I am being hit with this hard, like, this is going out to everyone. So I had a couple instances, but my house, I've got two DFL yard signs, three actually, one's in the window. So you can tell where I stand. And I had someone come door knock for Eric Paulson, and I was respectful, but I chatted with him for a second, and I'm like, are you getting paid to do this? And he goes, yeah. And I didn't ask him any further than that, but I got the sense that he wasn't aware of politics that much and was just going to every house. And that's why the yard signs didn't trip him up, that this probably wasn't a good idea.
Yeah, just a college kid out there that wants $15 an hour. I don't blame him. Yeah, I take 15 bucks an hour if I'm a 20 or 21-year-old kid. But I think that certainly explains why you got that Protect Trump Vote Neuberger shirt on right now. No, just kidding. No, Hunter didn't sell his soul. No, he's not being a Republican door knocker for the $15 an hour. Nope, we are confirming that is not the case.
Not that hard up yet.
I, on the other hand, though, no, I'm just kidding as well. You're listening to AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Coming up the other side of the break, we're going to talk about launching insurgent campaigns, especially if you're running against an incumbent in a primary election. We'll talk about that coming up next on AM 950 and some of the strategy that goes behind campaigning and primaries. All ahead on the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Something he cannot define. Bowel-shaking earthquakes of doubt and remorse. Assail him, impale him with monster truck force. In his mind, he's still driving, still making the grade. She's hoping in time that...
Stop by the Electric Fetus this weekend for the annual garage sale and fall festival. On Saturday the 22nd from 10 to 5, you'll find great deals behind the store as thousands of LPs and CDs are clearance price and get up to 75% off some gift department item. We'll have delicious glam donuts inside the store. Make your donation and support a youth link. Live music inside the store starts at noon. The sale continues on Sunday the 23rd from 11 to 5. An added bonus is 20% off almost everything store-wide both days. Some restrictions apply. Get some excellent deals this Saturday and Sunday at Electric Fetus, 2000 4th Avenue South in Minneapolis.
Waking up is easy when you look forward to breakfast. Serve 7 days a week at the Downtowner Woodfire Grill in St. Paul. Try eggs your way with hash browns, bacon, or sausage. There are four delicious varieties of Eggs Benedict that should not be missed. And buttermilk pancakes, waffles, or French toast are always fresh off the griddle. How about a Bloody Mary or screwdriver from the bar? The Downtowner Woodfire Grill is located at 253 West 7th Street with plenty of free parking. Or online at downtownerwoodfire.com.
The Fall St. Paul Art Crawl, presented by the St. Paul Art Collective, will be running October 12th, 13th, and 14th. This is a must-do experience that you will love. Over the weekend, you'll have a chance to explore a wide variety of art while touring through local artist studios, lofts, and galleries. Hosting over 300 artists, up for purchase will be paintings, photography, pottery, sculpture, fiber arts, and more. The Art Crawl sprawls over 30 locations. Join the Art Crawl and discover outstanding art for you to own. And when you buy local art, you're providing to artists so that they may continue to create the art we love. The Metro Transit is supporting the local art community with a free transit pass. Download your pass to ride buses and light rail for free during the Art Crawl. Be sure to get details at the stpaulartcrawl.org. That's the stpaulartcrawl.org.
Buy appliances below cost at Warner Stallion's Real Deal Clearance Sale this Saturday through Monday. Hundreds of yellow tag closeouts and floor models below cost. All with full factory warranties, laundry pairs, dishwashers, refrigerators, ranges, microwaves, grills, and more. Plus, unmatched savings on new special buys, including a Whirlpool laundry pair for $4.99 each while they last. Yellow tagged appliances below cost and unmatched savings on special buys during the Real Deal Clearance Sale this Saturday through Monday at all 10 Warner Stallion stores.
Prairie Oaks Memorial Eco Gardens is the first green cemetery in Minnesota. It's a beautiful, peaceful place where burials are celebrations of life with as little impact on the environment as possible. Tony Weber founded it because he wants to leave a green legacy for his grandchildren, something many of us might feel. Learn more, visit the website mngreengraves.com. Give them a call. The goal is so meaningful, so positive, it might be right for you. Prairie Oaks Memorial Eco Gardens.
With your AM 950 weather, I'm Brett Johnson. Look for showers and storms tonight with a low around 61. Tuesday cloudy with a high near 72. Wednesday showers and storms with a high near 69. And Thursday rain with a high around 71.
The Seward Co-op Creamery Cafe is the Eat Local Minnesota restaurant of the week. They have a delicious menu that ranges from vegetarian sandwiches to fresh burgers. And whenever possible, they source products that promote sustainable food systems and minimize resource consumption. Details at eatlocalminnesota.com.
Glad to have you with us on this Tuesday afternoon, filling in for Doug Padgett. He'll be back tomorrow, where he'll actually be talking to someone who wrote an article about how it's actually women who are really turning the tide in terms of the Democratic Socialist Movement. She wrote an article in one of the national publications, and she's a local person in Minnesota. Doug Padgett is going to be speaking with her coming up tomorrow afternoon at 4:05 here on AM 950. But right now, joined by a guy who is very involved in the Richard Painter campaign. It's Bill Halter, who is the communications director for Richard Painter's campaign. And we're going to chat a little bit about political strategy and what it takes to launch what I think you would probably agree was an insurgent campaign against, an incumbent senator who was really kind of popular with the party. But first up, Bill, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah, so you say switching parties the day you announce, announcing 1 month before the convention, being completely outspent and refusing to take PAC money. You consider that a scrappy and underdog campaign?
Just a little bit of an underdog. You're not quite the New York Yankees out
there. Yes, exactly. And it is one of those things where you just have to find ways to get free earned media, or whether it be on social media or whatever. And early on in the campaign, we were lucky with the dumpster fire hitting, and that got a lot of free publicity. And so people got Richard's message. But it certainly is a challenge, and it becomes more of a challenge when you go through that nomination process at the convention, where now all of a sudden the establishment has its weight behind your opponent as well. So,
yeah, definitely. And the important part of having this conversation is that what I want to get into is what it takes to launch kind of that successful insurgent campaign. Important to note, we don't want to necessarily relitigate the Richard Painter versus Tina Smith race, since I know we have some very passionate Richard Painter listeners out there. We don't want to get back into the Tina Smith versus Richard Painter debate. We want to get more into the strategy side. And how do you necessarily launch? I think the best example is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Mm-hmm. Or Cortez, rather, who launched that successful campaign against Joe Crowley, an established Democratic candidate. So first up, before we get into that, I want to know, what have you been up to since the campaign ended for Richard?
Well, hanging out with you guys and talking politics, and I've got a little bit of a background in sports, so I've been able to do to get back into that a little bit with coaching and broadcasting. So, but we're probably not the right people to be talking to in terms of launching a successful insurgency candidate, because we did not get it done, of course, during the primaries, and now we go forward and support Democrats across the board, and make sure that we do something to hold the man of the Oval Office in check.
Yeah, I think so. And so even though, as you said, you guys didn't necessarily have a successful campaign. I mean, it was 75-15, which by no stretch of the imagination was a close election, but you were still there for a few months and trying to figure out what worked and what didn't work. What were some of the things you think you learned, some of the biggest things you learned from being on that campaign and running against someone who, let's be honest with Tina Smith, even though she was appointed by Mark Dayton just a few months earlier, she was still relatively popular with the party. She hadn't made any controversial statements, and still overall, she's an incumbent senator.
Well, the challenges are obvious. If you can't afford to blanket the markets in the state with television advertising, it becomes really hard to get name recognition out there. Now, of course, Richard did have name recognition with some because of his appearances on MSNBC and CNN, but by no means did that encompass the entire state. When the attacks start coming, and they did, and many of them were untrue, it was just really, really challenging to deflect those or to respond to those in a way that was going to reach all the people that were hearing that. And so there was a lot of people, and this happens with every election, you know, certainly not unique to this particular one, but misinformation gets out there and it just becomes reality and you don't have the resources to debunk it.
Mm-hmm. So is it really just that name recognition and getting that media coverage that you think is the biggest challenge when you launch that type of campaign?
You know, honestly, if you can get the support of the party, obviously that's a big step that you can take. You were talking about trackers in the last segment. We had an eight-hour
You guys get any trackers?
We did. And we had an eight-hour Facebook Live performance with Richard where he just took questions from people for eight straight hours. And there was somebody obviously watching it because 6 hours into it, he answered a question. And they ended up using it. They attacked him with it and sent out a press release and sent out an email to DFL voters about it. And it's like, okay, someone was sitting there watching 8 hours of Facebook Live that day.
Was this tracker actually, if you know, was it with the Republican Party or actually with the DFL?
With the DFL, yeah.
Really? Interesting. So they were
I don't know who it was, but they obviously were watching it.
That's interesting. So they were actually in that room for the whole 8 hours. I hope they were getting at least a $15 wage. That's a long time to be sitting there.
Right.
Well, besides, you guys are kind of doing their job for them when you're doing an eight-hour stream. Why do you need them there? You guys are streaming it anyways.
But, you know, everyone who worked on the campaign, and obviously it wasn't a big team, but everyone got into it, you know, because of what was going on with the Trump administration and also to fight the money in politics. And our fight, you know, was unsuccessful in terms of being able to have a winning candidacy. But you've got Dean Phillips right now in the third who is running on a get money out of politics platform. It's been unsuccessful in the past. People just don't attach to it. You know, I think a lot of people have so much going on, they don't have enough time to really realize what PAC money is and those kind of things. But Dean Phillips is running on that no PAC money campaign finance reform message. And I think he just won the election today because he came out with a campaign ad. And it's a minute and 20 seconds, so it's not going to be able to run on television, but it's going to just go viral online, and it already has. It's about Bigfoot trying to find his opponent, Eric Paulson, and it plays on two key points. One, that Paulson has not been available to the voters, which I'm sure a number of people in the third would agree with that. And also that he's taken big money from a number of organizations, including Big Pharma. And so Bigfoot goes in to find Eric Paulson, and he finally finds him at a pharmaceutical company. And he gets some grainy video of him, and it's such a good ad. It's funny. It's going to paint Paulson. You know, people are going to be laughing at his candidacy. I think Dean Phillips, who has run a tremendous campaign, has a really, really talented staff working with him. I think he probably locked this thing up today. Obviously, there's some time, but he's looking good.
Oh, it's a great ad as well. I just love the fact that as soon as he sees Eric Paulson, he's fumbling around with a camera like you see so often in those TV shows, and they get those grainy shots. But I want to go back to something you were talking about earlier, and that's working with the party. Even though, as you said, Dean Phillips is running without PAC money, he at least has the support of the DFL party. You guys, as the Richard Painter campaign, we all know, obviously did not have the support of the party. But what kind of challenge would you face, like let's say if you won, balancing the fact that the party was against you, but if you are to win as that insurgent party, all of a sudden you have to work with them?
Yeah, don't think it would have been a challenge at all. That happens all the time in politics. Don't think that would have been a challenge. I mean, I would push for, and I said this before anything that happened with the Painter campaign, I just don't think it's appropriate for the party to lend their support behind a candidate on June 1st, that much before the primary election, and you're really kind of tipping the scales. Let's just put the candidates out there, let the voters decide, and then after that primary, then the party gets behind whoever the candidate is. But obviously both parties want to have a say in who the elected candidate is, and so it's unfortunate, but that's just one of the small things that's going on right now.
We're speaking with Bill Halter, the former communications director for the Richard Painter campaign. By the way, a name and face you may be hearing more on AM 950 in the future. But so you've seen it firsthand running that insurgent campaign as a big underdog. We, unfortunately for you guys, you didn't have a lot of success losing 75-15 to Tina Smith.
How many times are you going to bring that one?
Yeah, right. one of those sports guys
just
that keeps bringing
at the scoreboard.
Score. Yeah.
So,
scoreboard. But you've seen firsthand knowledge of some things that worked and some things that didn't. But I want to ask you about Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. What do you think she did that was able to connect with voters? Because she beat a very seasoned politician in Joe Crowley, a guy who was rumored to possibly be the next Speaker of the House should Nancy Pelosi not get it.
The big thing is there was changing demographics in that district, but also Crowley didn't show. I mean, it looks terrible if you no-show a debate. He sent a surrogate to a debate. It looks terrible. I think changing demographics, and then there is a sense of frustration, I think, with party establishment Democrats, with a lot of people that, hey, we've got a serious threat in the White House, and we need to get some new blood in here who are willing to do something about it and fight in a different in a lot of ways, a younger voice as well.
So going forward, I was talking with Hunter before the show about this, and I think, Hunter, you might have a question as well. But I think moving forward for Democrats, 2018, 2020, if those elections both go our way, we're going to be in a similar position as Republicans right now, where it's going to be us in power and us trying to hold our elected officials accountable. Do you think it's important that incumbents should be challenged in their primaries during every cycle to make sure we're holding their feet to the fire?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think you raise an absolutely great point. I think the Senate is going to be a tough haul in 18. I just don't know. The map looks good. You see Heidi Heitkamp in North Dakota. It's just a barrage of negativity against her right now. And that's obviously an uphill climb, as is trying to win as a Democrat in North Dakota. But absolutely. You got to hold them to the fire. And we're in an interesting situation right now where a lot of times you have these parallel stories where they don't equal the same sum. For instance, Al Franken, what he was accused of and what Roy Moore was accused of, they kind of got bunched in as the same story when they certainly were not. But we've got an interesting situation right now with what's going on with Kavanaugh and what's going on here locally with Keith Ellison.
Absolutely.
Very,
yes.
Very similar allegations. Reputable women, both came before an election. In Kavanaugh's case, the vote from the Senate. And so I would encourage, party establishment and minority leaders and majority leaders, they're trying to win elections. And so they're going to have their vision set on winning elections. That's their top priority. But gosh, you hope that the voters, these Democratic voters are going to go out in waves, have a high standard to where we're in the gutter right now. We've been taken into the gutter by an unqualified lunatic who's completely trying to change who we are as a country. If we just try to use the same tactics when things switch over, we're not going to be where we need to be. And so there is going to have to come a time, if that happens, as you say, maybe by 2020, the Democrats own all three houses, where there is a moment of, okay, we're going to turn the cheek on this one. We're not going to smear your faces in it. We're going to try to be better here.
You're listening to AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Brett Johnson, Hunter Haas, joined by Bill Halter, former communications director for the Richard Painter campaign. Coming up on the other side of the break, I want to chat a little bit more about Brett Kavanaugh and kind of get your thoughts on that as a political strategist and something you brought up with Keith Ellison and tying that in, because I think that's going to be a huge thing coming up during the campaign, trying to tie the Kavanaugh allegations to Ellison. We'll talk about that coming up next here on AM 950.
Your adventures begin at Seavers Fall Festival. Open every Friday, Saturday, and Sunday through October 28th next to Canterbury Park in Shakopee. It's fun for the entire family. For more information and to buy tickets online, visit SeaversFallFestival.com.
Crazy about pets? We are too. The Pet Connection Show is a great venue for fun, informative, and creative conversations about pets. Join myself, Kathy Menard, and Dr. Nicole Parole, along with guests who are leaders in the dynamic and growing pet industry, as we discuss healthcare, relationships, behaviors, and even political issues as they relate to our pets. So come, sit, stay for the Pet Connection Show, Sundays 11 a.m. to noon on AM 950 Radio, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
Summer's over and the kids are back in school. That means you can call Zero Res to clean up all the dirt your family dragged in from the outside. Their patented powered water will clean up the toughest messes and won't leave behind any smelly dirt attracting residue. I even had them clean up a mess earlier this summer from a few nameless friends who got a little clumsy with the wings and barbecue sauce. Just call 952-ZERO-RES or visit ZeroResMinnesota.com and ask for the AM 950 special. Three-room Zero Res abide starting at $149. Zero Res, spell it backward or forward, it spells the same.
Join over 300,000 Minnesota families by choosing Warner Stelling to be your appliance specialists. Our customers have helped us be very good at selling, installing, and servicing appliances. We work hard to earn your business. Choose Warner Stelling to be your appliance specialist.
The 54th Nobel Conference, Living Soil, A Universe Underfoot, is happening October 2nd and 3rd at Gustavus Adolphus College. The Nobel Conference invites participants to consider the vast diversity and complexity of soil and to ponder the challenges we face in protecting this most fundamental resource. Join 4,000 people on campus for one or both days to experience the presentation and Q&A sessions or watch the live stream. Some of the discussion questions the Nobel Conference will address include: what is soil health and what processes sustain healthy soils? What interactions connect the living entities in the soil, and how do those interactions shape natural systems? And how will climate change affect soils? New to this year's conference is that you can buy two tickets and get one free when you use the discount code FRIEND. Again, that's the 54th Nobel Conference, Living Soil, A Universe Underfoot, on Tuesday, October 2nd and Wednesday, October 3rd at Gustavus. Find the list of speakers, the schedule, and registration at gustavus.edu/Nobel Conference. That's gustavus.edu/Nobel Conference.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Brett Johnson, Hunter Haas, filling in on your Tuesday afternoon for Doug Padgett, who's out on his Vote Common Good tour, but he'll be back tomorrow here on AM 950. So the last 5 minutes on the show, I want to talk about something that you and I were both chatting on during the break and a little bit at the end of the last segment, and that's these allegations against Brett Kavanaugh and how they kind of relate to these allegations against Keith Ellison, because Minnesota Republicans, we've seen this in all sorts of special interest advertising. It's nothing but Keith Ellison, Keith Ellison, Keith Ellison. Hey, Democrat, do you support Keith Ellison? How shameful are you for supporting Keith Ellison? Then on the other hand, we have these very similar allegations against Brett Kavanaugh, against an accuser who kind of came out of nowhere and is making, for lack of a better word, kind of he said, she said allegations. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, I will say, I think we're getting a little bit better at this gradually. Kellyanne Conway came out and said the woman deserves to be heard. Trump even kind of got around to saying we'll let her, you know, be heard. And Trump is a guy who the 17 accusers of him weren't attractive enough for him to sexually harass. They're all lying. They're Democratic operatives. He defended Bill O'Reilly, Roger Ailes, Rob Porter. They're all great people. They're all great people, which, you know, Donald Trump vouching for your characters like Chef Boyardee vouching for fine cuisine, but he's coming around. We're getting better at it, I think, which is a good step through everything we're going through here. This is something where you can't obviously believe any allegation, you know, and obviously your radar is going to go up. It happens right before a campaign, but at the same time, you can't discount if there is credibility to the allegations. And so let's let these things play out. The one thing that's going to happen with the Ellison stuff is he's got to, or that's the, you know, we're getting really close from a political side. And this isn't necessarily relevant to the case of the allegations of, you know, physical and verbal abuse, but really getting close to the election. So this could be kind of a surprise if the Democrats come out and they find that the allegations are credible and they remove him. You know, there might be a month to get a new AG candidate in there.
We're speaking with Bill Halter, former communications director for the Richard Painter campaign, just kind of politics in general and strategy. I just think it's so hypocritical for Republicans to campaign saying, how do you support Keith Ellison? Mm-hmm. On the other hand, when you have Brett Kavanaugh out there, and of course, even the big orange gorilla in the White House with his allegations against him. I don't know. Do you think that even affects voters when they hear those arguments to try to counter saying, well, how can you support Keith Ellison? He's a terrible guy. Do you think it would have any effect?
You could play the game for
the what
hours,
right?
Because,
yeah.
Well, you support Keith Ellison. Well, you support Donald Trump. Well, you support so-and-so. You support Brett Kavanaugh, you know, and so that kind of stuff. As far as hypocrisy, I really hope voters do get to the point where they just say, I'm tired of it. And we're not, you know, if you're going to just show this just rank hypocrisy where it only matters if you're in power or if you're not in power or if it affects a Democrat or Republican, then I'm not going to vote for you because that's the only way that we can really have power. But the hypocrisy on both sides, truly, the Democrats certainly, it's not an equal situation with what some of the stuff we're dealing with the Democrats. They've taken it to a completely, or with the Republicans, they've taken it to a completely another level. Mitch McConnell's, you know, should be renamed Mr. Hypocrisy. It's sickening. It always has been sickening. It's nothing new. It's just gotten a little bit worse.
So overall, Hunter, I want to bring you on this too. I'll start with you, Bill, then I'll go to you, Hunter. Overall, do you think Kavanaugh gets confirmed?
Oh, that's a great question. I think there's too many unknowns for me to know. You know, so Mark Judge is not going to testify, which could potentially have made it less likely for Kavanaugh to get convicted. Because Judge, you know, he's written extensively about, you know, really kind of this chauvinistic, and he, you know, he's talked about his drinking days and those kinds of things. I think Mark Judge, had he testified, that could have maybe tripped up the Kavanaugh hearing a little bit more. I'll say I'm going to wait and see to see what comes out. I will say this, though. The people who say that, well, what Kavanaugh did when he was a high schooler is completely irrelevant, I can understand the argument if he admitted it. You know, so lying about something you do when you're in high school in front of a senatorial judiciary committee is disqualifying as a Supreme Court nominee.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. What about you, Hunter?
Yes, he gets confirmed. This is what Republicans do. They fall in line and they put their morals beside them when it comes time. So he's going to find his way through. Unfortunately, I don't want it that way, but this is what Republicans do. This is why we need to vote in November.
Hard to argue before you get. I will say one thing. Finally, Jeff Flake actually put some actions to his words. He was the one who delayed this vote. He was the one who said, I think we need to hear this accuser. We need to hear her out. And that has set up a situation where we're expecting next Monday there will be conversations with both the accuser and Kavanaugh.
Monday is going to be a wild day politically in Washington. We'll have to stay tuned.
What do you think, yes or no?
I'm going no. I'm feeling optimistic. I'm hoping I'm right, but we'll have to see. AM 950, Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Stay tuned. Norman Goldman's up next. Get around it.